Hey homeschoolers, it is Thursday, June 25th. I'm Carrie Donovan. I am so glad that you're here. I hope that you've come to be inspired and to be part of an American revolution, a revival, a reformation of the American public school system. I think it's going to take all of us, even the 40% of people, according to Real Clear Opinion Research, 40% of people are not going to be sending their kids back to school, even when the coronavirus lockdowns are lifted. So there's a whole bunch more of us now. Some of you I know are reluctant homeschoolers, unexpected homeschoolers, and eager homeschoolers. I think if we could combine efforts together, Republicans and Democrats, across the aisle and make changes, demand changes in education, we could find ourselves at the end of this school year a whole lot better off than we were when we went into it. According to this poll that was taken, a national poll that was taken, there are actually more Democrats now who are considering homeschooling. 45% of Republicans surveyed said they were not going to be sending their kids back to school after the lockdown. So welcome. It's typically a Republican-led movement, although there are Democrats, definitely. It's usually a Republican-led movement, but welcome Democrats, and of course welcome Republicans and independents and non-voters and everybody, although hopefully people who are non-voters will find a reason to vote. I do believe that we are seeing a call to action. We need to be very involved with what we need for our children. And I think that all things are pointing to school choice, which is not typically a Democrat policy agenda. It should be. It should be for everyone, Republican and Democrat, because that's what the country is demanding. Now, with parents being forced to homeschool, we'll see what happens. But hopefully, I want to make this year the best year ever. And I hope to inspire some new people to be thinking new ways about education. In my first podcast, I talked about the foundation, why I chose to homeschool. The best piece of advice that I read, that I was given, I have given to numerous people who've started out homeschooling. That is, understand why you're homeschooling. Because when the days get really hard, and they will, because homeschooling is hard, it's rewarding, it's satisfying, and it's hard. Know why you are homeschooling, and then that will help you get through the hard days. For me, it was I didn't want anyone to harm my children, and I didn't feel that it was safe for me to leave my children with people I didn't know. That was after spending a year doing a strategic study, a curriculum with a school district. So I spent a lot of time with these people. And I decided at the end to homeschool because I just didn't feel that they had my child's best interest in mind. I felt like they had their politics in mind, that they had a bigger agenda, and it wasn't anything to do with how my child was going to end up. Now, I formed some of those opinions by reading John Taylor Gatto, G-A-T-T-O. He is a very conservative educator, and he wrote a book that was published in 2003, The Underground History of American Education, a school teacher's intimate investigation into the problem of modern schooling. So we know that this problem has been going on for a long time. The problem of public school not addressing the needs of our children. I think that it's really hitting a flashpoint here at this current 2020. But all the way back in 2003, people were reading about these topics. And so I'm just going to jump in. I just want to jump in and read this book. This is from the epilogue right here. What has happened in our schools was foreseen long ago by Jefferson. We have been recolonized silently in a second American Revolution. Time to take our script from the country's revolutionary start. Time to renew traditional hostility toward hierarchy and tutelage. We became a unique nation from the bottom up. That is the only way to rebuild a worthy concept of education. Again, this is The Underground History by John Taylor Gatto. here's the prologue. This really, I just sat here, these three paragraphs, and just kept going over and over in my mind what was important about this to me and how it helped me to develop my my foundation for homeschooling. Bianca, you animal, shut up. Our problem is understanding forced schooling stems from an inconvenient fact that the wrong it does from a human perspective is right from a systems perspective. You can see this is the case of 6-year-old Bianca, who came to my attention because an assistant principal screamed at her in front of an assembly, "Bianca, you animal, shut up!" Like the wail of a banshee, this sang the school doom of Bianca, even though her body continued to shuffle around, the voodoo had poisoned her. Do I make much of this simple act of putting a little girl in her place? It must happen thousands of times every day in schools all over. I've seen it many times, and if I were painfully honest, I admit to doing it many times. Schools are supposed to teach kids their place. That's why we have age-graded classes. In any case, it wasn't your little Janie or mine. Most of us tactically accept the pragmatic terms of public school, which allow every kind of psychic violence to be inflicted on Bianca in order to fulfill the prime directive of the system, putting children in their place. It's called social efficiency. But I get this pre-recognition, this flash forward to a moment far in the future when your little girl Jane, having left her comfortable home, wakes up to a world where Bianca is her enraged meter maid, or a passport clerk Jane counts on for her emergency ticket out of the country, or the strange lady who lives next door. I picture this animal, Bianca, large and mean, the same Bianca who didn't go to school for a month after her little friends took to whispering, "Bianca is an animal, Bianca is an animal," while Bianca, only seconds earlier a human being like themselves, sat choking back tears, struggling her way through a reading selection by guessing what the words meant. In my dream, I see Bianca, a fiend manufactured by schooling, who now regards Janie as a vehicle for vengeance and a transport of passion. She, one, gives Jane's car a ticket before the meter runs out. Two, throws away Jane's passport application after Jane leaves the office. Three, plays heavy metal music through the thin partition which separates Bianca's apartment from Jane's while Jane pounds frantically on the wall for relief. Four, all of the above. You aren't compelled to loan your car to anyone who wants it, but you are compelled to surrender your school-aged child to strangers who process children for a livelihood. Even though one in every 9 school children is terrified of physical harm happening to them in school. Terrified with good cause. About 33 are murdered there every year. Your great-great-grandmother didn't have to surrender her children. What happened? If I demanded you give up your television to an anonymous repairman who needed to work, you'd think I was crazy. If I came with a policeman who forced you to pay that repairman even after he broke your set, you would be outraged. Why are you so docile when you give up your child to a government agent called a school teacher? I want to open up concealed aspects of modern schooling, such as the deterioration it forces and the morality of parenting. You have no say at all in choosing your teachers. You know nothing about their background or families, and the state knows little more than you do. This is as radical a piece of social engineering as the human imagination can conceive. What does it mean? One thing you do know is how unlikely it will be for any teacher to understand the personality of your particular child or anything significant about your family, culture, religion, plans, hopes, dreams, and the confusion of school affairs. Even teachers so disposed don't have any opportunity to know those things. How did this happen? Before you hire a company to build a house, you would, I expect, insist on a detailed plans showing what the finished structure was going to look like. Building a child's mind and character is what public schools do. their justification for prematurely breaking family and neighborhood learning? Where is documentary evidence to prove this assumption that tainted and certified professionals do it any better than people who know and love them and care for them? There isn't any. The cost to New York State for building a well-schooled child in the year 2000 is $200,000 per body when lost interest is calculated. The capital sum invested in the child's name over the past 12 years would have delivered $1 million to each kid as a nest egg to compensate for having no school. The original $200,000 is more than the average home in New York City cost. You wouldn't build a home without some idea what it looked like when it was finished, but you are compelled to let a corp of perfect strangers tinker with your child's mind and personality without the foggiest idea what they want to do with it. Law courts and legislators have totally absolved school people from liability. You can sue a doctor for malpractice, but not a school teacher. Every home builder is accountable for customers years after the home is built. Not school teachers, though. You can't sue a priest, minister, or rabbi either. That should be a clue. If you can't be guaranteed even minimal results by these institutions, not even physical safety, if you can't be guaranteed anything except that you'll be arrested if you fail to surrender your kid, just what does the public in public schools mean? What exactly is public about public schools? That's a question to take seriously. If schools were public as libraries, parks, and swimming pools are public, as highways and sidewalks are public, then the public would be satisfied with them most of the time. Instead, a situation of constant dissatisfaction spanned many decades. Only in Orwell's newspeak, as perfected by legendary spin doctors of the 20th century, such as Ed Bernays and Lee Ivey, or great advertising combines, is there anything public about public schools. I quit, I think. In the first year of the last decade of the 20th century, during my 30th year as a school teacher, in Community School District 3, Manhattan, after teaching in all five secondary schools and the district crossing swords with one professional administration after the next, after the other, as they strove to rid themselves of me, after having my license suspended twice for insubordination and terminated covertly, once while I was on medical leave of absence after the City University of New York borrowed me for a five-year stint as a lecturer, and the Education Department and the Faculty Rating Handbook published by the Student Council gave me the highest rating in the document department in my last 3 years, after planning and bringing about the most successful permanent school fundraiser in New York City history, after placing a single eighth grade class into 330,000 hours of volunteer community service, after organizing and financing a student-run food cooperative, after securing over 1,000 apprenticeships during the collection of tens of thousands of books for the construction of private student libraries, after producing 4 talking job dictionaries for the blind, writing 2 original student musicals, and launching a memoranda of other initiatives to reintegrate students within a larger human reality, I quit. I was New York City State Teacher of the Year when it happened, an accumulation of disgust and frustration which grew too heavy to be borne finally did me in. To test my resolve, I sent a short essay to the Wall Street Journal titled, "I Quit, I Think," and in it I explained my reasons for deciding to wrap it up, even though I had no savings and not the slightest idea what else I might do in my mid-50s to pay the rent. In its entirety, it read like this: "Government schooling is the most radical adventure in history. It kills the family by monopolizing the best times of childhood and by teaching disrespect for home and parents. The whole blueprint of school procedure is Egyptian, not Greek or Roman. It grows from the theological idea that human value is a scarce thing, represented symbolically by the narrow peak of a pyramid. The idea passed into American history through the Puritans It found its scientific presentation in the bell curve, along which talent supposedly appropriates itself by some iron law of biology. It's a religious notion. School is its church. I offer rituals to keep heresy at bay. I provide documentation to justify the heavenly pyramid. Socrates foresaw if teaching became a formal profession, something like this would happen. Professional interest is served by making what is easy to do seem hard, by subordinating the laity to the priesthood. School is too vital a job. Protect contract giver and protector of the social order to allow itself to be reformed. It has political allies to guard its marches. That's why reforms come and go without changing much of anything. Even reformers can't imagine school much different. David learns to read at age 4, Rachel at age 9. In normal development, when both are 13, you can't tell which learned first, the 5-year-old or the 4-year-old. The spread means nothing at all. But in school, I label Rachel learning disabled and slow, and David down a bit too. For a paycheck, I adjust David to depend on me to tell him when to go up and stop. He doesn't outgrow that dependency. I identify Rachel as discount merchandise, special education fodder. She'll be locked in her place forever. In 30 years of teaching kids, rich and poor, I almost never met a learning disabled child. Hardly ever met a gifted and talented one either. Like all school categories, these are sacred myths created by human imagination. They derive from questionable values we never examine because they preserve the temple of schooling. That's the secret behind short answers, tests, bells, uniforms, time, blocks, age, grading, standardization, and all the rest of the school religion punishments. Our nation, there isn't a right way to become educated. There are as many ways as fingerprints. We don't need state-certified teachers to make education happen. That probably guarantees it won't. How much more evidence is necessary? Good schools don't need more money or a larger year. They need radical free market choices, variety that speaks to every need and runs risks. We don't need a national curriculum or national testing either. Both initiatives arise from ignorance of how people learn or deliberate indifference to it. I can't teach this way any longer. If you hear of a job where I don't have to hurt kids to make a living, let me know. Come fall, I'll be looking for work. That, in the book goes on, and I'll read some more in the days to come, but that just rocked my world. There's so much there that was very meaningful to me. And when I first read this, my oldest son was 2, he's 22 now, and all I knew was that I had this perfect little baby, and he was so smart already, and he was doing all of these amazing things, and I didn't want to be separated from him. So on one hand, I wanted to spend more time with him. I wanted to raise him myself. I could not imagine that in a few years' time at that point, I was going to hand him off to someone and trust that they were going to have his best interest in mind. And so when I read this by John Taylor Gatto, it just blew my mind that someone was being so honest. My own personal history and journey with my own personal schooling was terrible. It was horrible. And I remembered that there were times when I wouldn't do math the way that my teacher wanted me to. And I didn't understand because I could get the right answer all the time, but she didn't like the way that I did it. And so I ended up being stubborn and digging my heels in and telling her, no, I don't care what punishment you give me, I'm not doing it your way. And so school is not good for people like me. And I imagine that my son at that point, I was imagining my son's probably going to be a lot like me. And what if he's like that? I can't be making excuses for wasting my son's childhood or his time or his education because it's not in my nature to do it. I don't want to do it. I'm an American. I deserve better, and my child deserves better. So here in this essay, he talks about, John Taylor Gatto talks about free market choices. And remember, this is 2002. So this was quite revolutionary for the time. But what are we dealing with now? We're dealing with people who want school choice, who are saying this model does not fit us. The national curriculum at that point in 2002, that's about the time that I started researching, and I ended up being a part of a pilot program for Common Core, which now we know is basically a national curriculum. You know, we talk about nationalism and populism, and it serves the good many times when we're talking about jobs and things like that. But when we're talking about local control over schools, nationalizing a curriculum is one of the dumbest things I think that anybody has ever come up with. And that's why I decided to homeschool. After being a part of a strategic planning session for a year, after reading these kinds of essays, and after knowing I just don't want to turn my child over to someone else, I decided I can hang in there and I can do this homeschooling thing. At the time, there weren't the mountains and mountains of different curriculum choices. I sort of just came up with things on my own. My son, as I spoke about in the first podcast, my son graduated with a degree in biomolecular. I always get a little bit backwards. He's smarter than I am. Biomolecular and chemical engineering, cum laude. He graduated at the top of his class. My second child is 18. He is a senior. He is the top of a senior in college. He is the top of his class. So I ended up doing pretty well. My kids did pretty well. At the time, though, it was scary and it was a leap of faith. As I said in the first podcast, I wish I would have taken some time to enjoy it a little bit more because it all worked out just fine. If I had known then what I know now, reading this essay again this many years later, it's the first time I've read it this many years later, I have to agree with so many things. What is this idea of a professional school teacher? As if any of us couldn't go to college and get a degree and be a professional school teacher. They change, and you all know this if you have children, they change from, you know, the emphasis is on sight words. No, the emphasis is on phonics. Really, it's got to be a combination of both. Any smart person who's actually taught anyone to read knows. But that gives you a framework of they don't know what they're talking about. Because one year it's this and the next year it's that. And they have parents running around having discussions about, oh, my, this teacher, you know, is doing these terrible things to my children and I'm not comfortable with it. That's a great point. Why do we not know who these people are who are teaching our children? So many parents are uncomfortable. So many children are miserable. Why are we stuck with this situation? And it's gotten worse from 2002 to 2020. It's gotten so much worse. And now your child is going to be forced to wear a mask and sit behind a partition. And I don't even know what else. The different regulations that people are dealing with. I don't know how people deal with them. I'm going to go back and read something here. Government schooling is the most radical adventure in history. It kills the family. By monopolizing the best times of childhood and by teaching disrespect for home and parents. So that right there, just, you know, think about that. How are you going to give your children advice as they get into their older years in college if they have total disrespect for you? It's just another reason to homeschool. That came from a teacher who had spent a long time teaching and was given a lot of awards, and children, his students really loved him. And if he wrote those kinds of things, really, I hope that speaks to you. If you have been uncomfortable about school and the way that your teacher have been teaching or have been treating your child, then just know that you're not alone. I remember that my son, Stephen, wanted to go to school, so I let him go to school for a couple of months. And the teacher kept sending me back notes in a folder, and I didn't know that I was supposed to sign them every day because I really don't care what she has to say, so I didn't look at them. To be honest with you, I just didn't care what she had to say. And every day, she just was telling me, this was wrong, that was wrong, this was wrong, that was wrong. So I started signing. You know, she had a fit and she contacted me by email and she said I wasn't looking at them. And so I said, okay, fine, I'll start looking at them. And then I started writing back in the file, sending them back with my son, what was wrong with her, what I thought was wrong with her, that I, as a taxpayer, found that this was disturbing. And I sent those things back to her and she didn't think that it was very funny at all. I wasn't trying to be funny, actually. I really meant those things. When did it become okay for people to mistreat you and your children? Like, as if they are, that we are wards of them. Why do parents put up with that? Partially because over a number of years, our power has eroded. And that's something that we need to take back. And we need to take it back by force, meaning we need to demand it back. This is something that hopefully will really seep into your mind this year of homeschooling, because I guarantee you, you're going to have more successes than you think that you're going to have. And you're going to start to realize, hey, wait a minute, why I didn't go to college to be a teacher, and yet here my kids are learning. Because it's really, truthfully, it's more about how the child learns than how the person teaches. Because the student is the product, not the teacher. So when you start to shift these points of view and you start to see your children accomplishing, growing, learning, and hopefully being happier, hopefully you're going to see that something needs to change in public education. And I hope that you will join me in demanding an American revival of public education. We need to get politics out of schools completely, because we need to focus on children. Doesn't matter what the teachers want. It's what we want for our children that needs to come back into the schools. So this year of homeschooling for you, hopefully you will find the perfect curriculum. Your children will learn the perfect, you know, topic that they want to learn about, and things will go very well for you. And I'm really glad that you've joined me here at this podcast. Hopefully you're out there talking to other people. Go look up John Taylor Gatto. That guy's going to change your mind and make you a homeschool warrior. Yesterday I was a homeschool hippie. Today I'm a homeschool warrior. Tomorrow I'm going to read a little bit more of John Gatto, read some more articles like this one here in the federationforchildren.org. Check that out. Check that out. How many people, 40% of people are saying they're not going to send their children back. That means the problem is with the schools. Here's the good news. The problem is not with the parents. The problem is not with the children. The problem is with the schools. Now we know what to fix. Let's see how far we can get in instilling greatness in our children this year. And hopefully when we get past this after the election, and when we get past this after this coronavirus restrictions are lifted, we could get back and we can maybe have a great public school for future generations of America. But it's up to us. We have to do it. We have to hear the call to action. We have to do something. And this could be the greatest year ever. So to all of you reluctant homeschoolers and unexpected homeschoolers and eager homeschoolers, I hope that you learned something today. Drop me a note at Carrie Donovan, KarieDonovan, 101 at gmail.com. Let me know. Hey, I'm just out here. One of my solutions is I'm just going to start talking and I'll just keep talking. This is a great app for making a podcast. Maybe you should make one. Send it to me. I'd love to hear your ideas on homeschooling, an American revival, and raising greatness. I want to hear some good ideas. I still have a 12-year-old, so I'm still out there doing it. Thanks for listening, you guys, and I will talk to you tomorrow.